When you're creative and you're like working on something for a while and then you finally finish it, you're just like, oh my God, I can't deal with this thing.
What types of videos should people really be making?
How-to videos are the most engagement. Those videos are like non-negotiables. Even the ones that I see that are like, you couldn't even guess this was AI. I guessed it was AI.
Welcome to Talking to You Live with Chris Savage. I'm your host, Chris Savage. This is the show that serves up the loudest takes on building businesses, top-notch products, and unforgettable brands. This episode is a special one. We recorded in person in the studio with one of my favorite people to talk video with. So if you've ever wondered what's really working in video marketing or want to hear some spicy takes from our head of content, Sam Balter, stick around. All right, so Wistia just dropped our State of the Video report. Pretty big deal. And this year we analyzed over 100 million videos and surveyed over 1,300 marketers to figure out what's going on with video right now, what's working, what's not, what's flopping, what are the next hot things that people should be aware of. We're talking engagement trends, we're talking AI, we're talking about changes to the creative process, how people think about budgeting, efficiency, and really where your videos can get the most bang for the buck. So that's what we're here to do.
And we thought, who better to break it down than head of content at Wistia, Mr. Sam Balter, the guy who's been in the weeds, crunching the numbers, helping us make sense of them. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so Sam, this report starts with a pretty bold claim, a pretty loud take, if you will.
Yes.
Which it says, video isn't just a part of the strategy, it is the strategy. Do you think that's true? Or did you lie in your report?
That one was from Pieter from Superside. That was a quote from him. And I don't think I lied in the report. I think that is true. I think a lot of brands are shifting to just thinking about making their content from like a video first perspective.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the times on content, you'd like write a blog post. The blog post would turn into an ebook. The ebook would then become a video. And I think a lot of people are working in the reverse, where they're thinking about the video first and then making those other derivative assets out of it. So it's like, what is going to make the video perform? Because you could just get more views on videos in general than if you had the same piece of content that might be a blog post.
Do you think that's just the change in like how Google search works, what it reward? Like, you know, today, obviously, if you make content, the further afield it is from the core of what you talk about, the less likely it is to actually get traffic and engagement, where that was not true 10 years ago.
Yes.
But like a lot of video is the currency, the medium that on so many platforms actually can get you more, maybe not traffic to start, but more attention. Do you think that's why this is? Or
yeah, and I mean, I think like every platform is just shifting that way. Even we had some data from SEMrush this year's report, and it was saying that out of like general search results, now about 30% of those search results are videos.
That's wild.
So it's like we're talking like Google has shifted to this. If you're on LinkedIn, videos, Twitter's shifting towards videos, and then you have video specific platforms. So it's anybody who was a primarily text platform is also incorporating video as well. And I think the reason they're all doing it is because people click on it. And so like whatever people click on, they're going to add more of that type of content.
If marketers are still treating video kind of like an afterthought or like a side hustle, what's the warning? What's going to happen to these
folks? I think it's like it takes time to shift like a content team or a content strategy. Like I don't think these are things you can shift overnight. And I think for a lot of companies, like it's not like, oh, if you don't jump on this today, you're screwed. But like, it is one of those things where like, you have to start moving in that direction. You have to start trying out videos that are going to work and maybe picking a channel or picking a type of video and just iterating on that process over and over again. Because I think like, it's also in general for marketers, just more fun to create videos than I think a lot of other pieces of content. So it's like, if you get it well, where you have a successful video that performs well and it was fun to make, you're going to do that over and over and over again. And so I think like that's one of the things that's really exciting for people.
Let's go deeper on like types of videos. So like looking at the report, looking at the data, what types of videos should people really be making? Like what does it become something you have to do versus something like, oh, maybe I should take a look at this.
Yeah, like for the second year in a row, how-to videos are the most engagement. And I think a lot of companies should be thinking about like their support documentation, their explainers, how to use things, how to explain a certain workflow that their tool helps fix. Like those videos are like non-negotiables because a lot of people are going to YouTube to learn how to do things. Like I'm gonna put a dimmer switch on in my house. I'm not gonna read an article. I'm gonna watch a video. I'm gonna use a piece of software, and I want to know how to like embed the video in my website. I'm gonna go to a video over an article. And so like for me, how-to videos are the biggest point of leverage because they actually do pretty well on social. People will engage with them there. They're going to increase like your general product adoption, and they're going to help people actually like see the product in use, which I think is one of the biggest things companies could be doing.
They're also not like, they don't have to be like crazy branded over the top conceptual videos. They actually do well when they're really easy and simple to understand, which I think also makes it from like a how do you get started or figuring this out? It's like actually attainable.
Yeah, it's just a much lower bar to do like a screen record nicely to walk through something and then explain it or just show your product in use if you have a physical product. And I think like that takes away a lot of the pressure of like, I need to make a 15-second really compelling ad. It's like you have a little bit more space to write. You have a little bit more space to like be authentic and kind of like get mix up your words a little bit in a way where it would be a lot harder to do with a much shorter video.
So how-to videos definitely feel more approachable from the production side. Are there any other videos that kind of have that same like, ooh, we're not video experts, but we think we could do this.
The unsung hero would be the webinar. Like the webinar is just like a big video type that is sort of weirdly siloed off from the rest of videos. They're kind of like made as these like big chunks of things where you're focusing on getting people to attend the webinar, but then you end up after the webinar with like 30 to 60 minutes of video content. And so like that is one of those where a lot of people should be sort of really focusing on what they could get out of their webinars because it's such a good asset that people just don't really use enough. And even in this year's State of Video report, we asked people like, what are the most impactful video types for you? And webinar was like number two. So it's one of these things where it's like, it doesn't get the shine of like a fancy product video.
Yeah.
It doesn't have like the same level of like tutorialness of a how-to that might perform well on social, but it's like 30 plus minutes of really good content that you put a ton of work into. So I think it's one of those is like, that's a really good video type people should be focusing on and spending time on like, how do I make this better? How do I improve it? How do I make the content more engaging? Or how do I like plan the content in such a way where it's more usable later.
Yeah, I think that's a key point, right? Because like webinars also are, they are really close to a metric that matters, right? It's like how many people signed up and they signed up to watch the thing live. And so you get the email and you can actually compare that to other like efforts that you do. But then it does seem like what we're seeing is this expectation shifting, right? Which is where you now assume you can always watch something. So I'm going to learn how to do this thing. I can watch how to do it. I assume I'm going to be entertained and educated.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually look at the webinar is like, when you look at it as a 30, 60 minute video, it's like, duh. Like, why wouldn't you make clips from it?
Yeah.
And I think that, but I think if you look at it as like one person sharing a screen and they're like really tiny in the corner, doesn't sound that exciting. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's like the shift in the form of what webinars are becoming now has put us in a position where it's like, hey, we can actually start to meet the audience expectations. And one of the ways we could do that is like the webinar is more exciting, but then also that means the clips are better. And there's like more of a reason for someone to continue to follow along or more of a reason to remind somebody of the things that they just took away, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I think like for me, it's like we've been using more pre-recorded content throughout webinars. And I think it's just like something a lot of people could be looking at is like, oh, I'm going to build this right, nice pre-recorded thing. I'm going to play it during the webinar. Then I'm going to go to live Q&A or I'm going to go back and forth between pre-recorded and regular. So you could add like the production value of a pre-recorded video into the format of a webinar, and now you have this really great thing to clip for afterwards.
I feel like that's also, I mean, that's how a lot of the news works.
Yes.
Right? It's not all just the people at the desks.
It's not.
Yeah, but it's like the, you know, going on location, shooting the stories and bringing it back. And I think about that a lot because It is basically two, three people, one person sitting behind a desk.
Yep.
And that's all they're doing. And it's like, it's actually, well, the way that we're making it interesting and the way that we're like helping you better understand the information is like, there's graphics that show up, slides. There's like pre-recorded like sessions that come back. It's like, okay, compressing a lot of storytelling into one thing. And then all, when you think of it as all those assets can live on their own, I think it makes it worthwhile to make a lot of those pre-recorded assets when I'm sure if you're looking at it, it's like, well, I hope I get 150 people at this thing and I get them and I spend a ton of time and effort. Should I really do it? Should I really make a pre-recorded session? And it's like, well, if it's only for that one event, maybe, depends on how valuable it is. If it's going to be living on in lots of other places, then it becomes a no-brainer.
Yeah, and it's like, even for us, like for last year's State of Video Live show, we had it where normally like a webinar, it's like most of the views come for the day people show up, and then there's like a dwindle. People will watch it for like maybe 2-3 months afterwards or something like that. Sometimes like up to 4 months. But for our State of Video last year, we like, okay, we're going to get a ton of use out of this content. We're going to embed it in a blog post that's like very SEO rich. We're going to make a bunch of clips out of it. And people are still watching State of Video Live from last year.
Cool.
Like it's 12 months later and like we're still getting views on that content. We still have stuff from like clips. It's just like putting that effort in means the long tail is so much longer.
I feel like the SOV report goes hard on repurposing content. Why do you think so many marketers treat video like a one-off campaign rather than a content buffet?
I think, I mean,
oh my God.
That's a great, I mean, why is it a content buffet? Why is the video more of a content buffet?
That felt right.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but.
Just like that you can like keep going back to it for more and more.
Yeah.
That was the thinking up there.
Keep going. It's like an all-you-can-eat buffet.
An all-you-can-eat buffet. Okay. Why? What stops people from keep going back?
Not a one-plater.
Not a one-plater.
Yeah.
I think people are shifting where people are going back more for seconds on videos, more for thirds on videos, trying things again.
Thank you for extending this metaphor.
Yeah, I'm stuck with it. I think like the other thing is, one thing I think about is sometimes stuff is just exhausting to produce the bigger it is. And then when it's done, when you're a creative and you're like working on something for a while and then you finally finish it and it's done and you get it out of the world, like sometimes you don't want to see it again. Like you're just like, oh my God, I can't deal with this thing.
Yeah.
And I think like since videos sometimes are like can be higher production, you might feel that way. Like, oh, I put a lot of effort into this. So I think like one part of it is just like, I put a lot of effort in, I'm done, it's out the door. I think the second thing that kind of like holds people back a little bit from repurposing is there's just a lot of demand for video. So you're on to the next one relatively quick. Whereas like with blogging, I feel like that was the way it was for a while where you were like on to the next blog post, on to the next blog post, on to the next blog post. But then people started to figure out like, oh, if I'm just optimizing old posts, or if I'm refreshing or if I'm reusing, I could get more out of it. And I think that workflow that we applied to like text and blogging is now starting to get applied to video, where people are looking at their video libraries and saying like, there's a lot of good stuff in here. I could maybe update a clip of this one, or I can shorten it or add a different bumper and get more use out of what I already had.
There's a part of the State of Video report when we talk about people, how much time and effort is spent on like making the video versus promoting it. Maybe you can go a little deeper here with like what we've seen and what people should take away.
Yeah, I feel like we saw this year that like most people were spending the vast amount of their time creating videos and way less time promoting them. And I think that's one of those things where it's like, that's where we are today, where everybody is spending most of the time they create it, they get it, they ship it out, and it goes on social. I think we're going to probably see a time period where we start getting more to like 50-50. And I think some of that stuff is going to get divided into subgroups where it's going to be like promoting the video, making the video into various different versions and promoting those different versions, testing different thumbnails, testing different things there, testing like different variations of it. And so like, I feel like people are in the kind of early stages of like variation testing and like creating like new thumbnails for it. You see that a lot on YouTube, but you don't see that as much on like people's websites or even on like a lot of other how people go about videos. So basically, I would say, I think that like people are spending a lot of time creating because it's still a new muscle for a lot of businesses. But as time goes on, I would expect people to spend more time, a larger percentage of their time promoting.
That makes perfect sense. I think also let's jump into the AI conversation because obviously it's all
your really, fave.
It's one of my faves, and very directly connected, I think, here, right? So like, what are we seeing today in terms of, in the report, we talk about AI as a creative multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about like where do we see people using it today? Where does it look like they're going to use it next so that they can actually, you know, in many cases, try to decrease the amount of time spent on production so they have more time for some of the other things?
Basically, one of the things is like AI adoption is way up. Yeah. So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, by the end of the year, you'll probably see 60% of people working in video using AI in some capacity. What was surprising to me was like, I thought it was going to be all AI generated visuals, all like AI avatars and stuff like that. But the use cases were way more in pre-production scripting. And then at the very end of like sharing. So one of the things that I thought was like interesting talking to people and also like the video people at Wistia is like, we use it a lot just for scripting videos, and other people are using it for things like, I need to adjust the tone of this script, mm-hmm. or they're using some sort of other content asset. Like, I have a blog post and I want to turn this blog post into a 30-second video or a 60-second video, write me the script for it. And I thought that was just something that I was like very surprised to see, because I would think like video and editing would have not been the text scripting part of it.
Yeah.
Like I would have thought it would have been the visuals. Yeah. I would have thought it would have been the editing side. On the post where they're like closely equally using it, it's more on things like captions, adding captions to videos, and then language translation and dubbing. And so it's like very interesting to see people now just being so into like, oh, it's not really changing the creative process or what the video looks like, but it's all those time-saving things of like making sure you have good captions or any of those other parts, adjusting those.
Which I think is a cool win for creatives, right? Because if everyone was using it for the creative execution part, we could just see a lot of videos that all look the same, right?
Yeah. Like everybody looking like Studio Ghibli, or everybody being like an action figure. Like that would be the resulted video world, but like that's not really what we see.
Yeah, I feel like it's a big difference between what you see people playing with mm-hmm. and then sharing on social, and then what are they actually using day to day? Because the scripting part does make sense. Like the AI, Gen AI writing has gotten much better. And also, writer's block sucks. So like, if you're sitting there trying to come up with an idea for something and you're like, make me five different versions. I feel like I use it sometimes for that. And I don't use a single one of the versions.
I feel like it's that. It's make me five, make me three, make me four. So just being able to see those variations that quickly.
Yeah, and then you react to them.
Right.
And that's, I find.
Hate it, love it. Hate it. Like, it's just like, well, no, more there's also, of that, less you know,
there's
of this.
Just, there's also a weird thing in there where it's like, if this is a human being who just spent a bunch of time writing a script for you, you don't normally just say, I hate it.
Yeah.
Or this sucks. You can't, it's like, socially, that would be, like, maybe you
bad
did.
Taste.
I mean, I edit, so I do that. But like,
I think a lot of people are not used to doing that. Like, if someone just put in a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I do think it's interesting because, like, you almost, with the AI, you're like, I mean, I think you should generally treat it nicely. But but I think you can be much more direct.
Yeah, that they can give more candid feedback.
Yeah, and then it's like, I at least find I'll be super direct. And sometimes I don't use any of the things that it generated, but it helped me decide what I do want to do. And so it's like as if I needed someone to brainstorm with, and we were just going to spend an hour coming up with ideas. Like, oh, we've 5 minutes later, I've got five. And I made me really think I have conviction about one or something. It made me think of another idea related to it.
Yeah.
It's just interesting because it makes sense. There's still human editing deciding which of these storylines, which of these things am I going to take? And I'm going to use the process that I love doing and I'm really good at doing.
Yeah.
And in the end, the other stuff like AI dubbing, you can't do it. Like you couldn't do it.
I just think it's like a lot of times too, it's like if you've ever worked with a writing partner where you've worked on writing together, it's like part of the process is just bouncing ideas off each other.
Yeah.
But a lot of marketers don't really operate like that anymore. We're like very siloed from each other as like you do this type of content, you do another type. And so like AI has been nice for that because it does kind of remind me of having a writing partner again. Like, oh yeah, this is great. Like I like that part. This is good. That's terrible. I don't mind telling people things are terrible or I don't like them in edits. So
that's great.
That's good for
That just makes me wonder, like, on a whole, do you think that marketers who are, let's say they're newer to video strategy, do you feel like they should just be sharing scripts and ideas way more than they do? Like, could that actually make an impact?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think it's always good to share your work as like a creative and try and like collaborate with people. I think the issue with any kind of thing, even sharing AI or not or whatever, it's like, you don't have to take people's feedback. Like, it's good to get people's feedback to see what their reactions are, but you can just ignore it a lot of the time. And I think that's like an important thing with any kind of feedback, is just to be directive of the type of feedback you're looking for. And like, AI has helped me do that a little bit, because I'll be like, oh, fix this, or like, I don't like this. And it's like forces you to give more direct or more specific feedback.
I also think, like, looking at the report, you see the demand for video is way up.
Yeah.
Right. Everyone, video everywhere, video first content. Basically, you take the video and make other assets from it, stuff like that. And budgets are not.
Yes.
Which is like another big factor. We've basically been through a period of time of like a boom with COVID and then like a pullback. And people are basically saying, like, the world around us is shifting. You got to get there. And so I think it's also, in a lot of cases, like, you know, it'd be nice to sit there in a room with five people on every video and brainstorm and come up with all the perspective. We just can't. Which was, it kind of comes through loud and clear. So it's the same message we heard last year too, which is like, demand is up for video, budgets are not. So we have to find tools that help us try to
speed up parts of
this, so that the part that we're doing that we can do uniquely, like, very well, we're like leaning in there.
I think the other thing about budget that I think is interesting is, like, video is not a line item, really. It's like, video is not a line item for most companies. So they don't have a sense of like what they could do with video. And I think like a lot of like more senior leadership people would benefit from telling their marketing teams, like, we really want to go all in on video. You have a $50,000 budget. Whether that's making studios, working with contractors, other things. Sometimes, like, you get into this weird thing in marketing land where people are like, pitch me an idea and I'll tell you if I have budget for that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the times it could work a little bit better for a lot of people is like, I want you to grow video at this company. We're allocating $100,000 or $80,000 or $50,000 or $10,000 or whatever it is to video. How does that change what you're going to do?
I think you're completely right on that. Yeah. I think that's something that, like, basically, there's companies that have somebody internally who is already good, or they have like a relationship with an agency or one person who can like come and help them, and then companies that don't. And often I don't think it is like super premeditated, where it's, we're saying, hey, we just expect that video is going to be a part of this. But I think we have done that with design. Right? Like, marketing teams, like, you expect there's going
to
be design.
To be, like, it's part of the budget.
And it didn't used to be. Like, it used to be a lot of, like, outsourcing to other firms, like, helping you do it. Not everything would look good. Some stuff would look good. And it's like, no, the world around us changed. And it went from, like, design being, like, a nice to have and a differentiator to a requirement. Like, if you want to compete today, like, we expect our stuff to be beautiful. Like, we ordered food. Right. I'm expecting it to come in a beautiful bag. I'm not even kidding. Like, it's just like, that's just what we expect. And that's part of what you pay for. And I think that we're kind of in this transition of people figuring out that, like, video is not only here to stay, it's critically important. And then I think the difference is actually what you're saying is, like, if you can just create a little budget, it gives people much more freedom to be creative.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, even the thing of, like, just, it starts, I feel like the first budget item is headcount. And it's like, we've seen this year, we looked at how many people are you creating it in-house versus are you using agencies? And like, in-house keeps growing.
Yeah.
So it's like the first line item is like, are you spending headcount budget dedicated to video? And then I think the next thing is, once you get headcount budget and you have agency budget, that it's like, okay, great. Now you are getting a dedicated line item for video that you could use.
Hearing it like that, like, video as a line item is, I feel like we're not quite at that moment, but we are shifting into that moment, which is really cool to see.
I think that's also where places where video gets you distribution, people have an easier time investing in. Because it's a risk. Like, you may not guarantee that you get the distribution, but you can almost look at it as like ad dollars or something. So it's like, oh, I would have spent ad dollars to get my message in front of people. Instead, I'm going to spend production dollars and hope that organically, like, I get some reach in these different places.
Yeah.
And the challenge has just been, like, the speed of the change, right? Because, as you're talking about before, a lot of these places, like, basically every social media platform was text first, and they're all turning into video first.
Yeah, there's it's not like very few things are holding on to be like a non-video thing or video is excluded from the platform. Like, I don't really know of something that people use a lot today that doesn't have a video component.
Yeah.
I know, I'm trying to think right now.
Like, besides Substack.
But even they have video.
Yeah, true.
and it'll probably become a bigger thing.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of anything.
Yeah, but that, I mean, LinkedIn was the one that surprised me because it just seemed like, I don't know why it surprised me, but the fact that they made the vertical video tab and then now that like had like a huge amount of organic reach and they figured that out was like, oh, wow, even this place that was like businessy content that was like not as cool and not as like entertaining, like this has is becoming video first.
I feel like the thing that got me onto LinkedIn being like very video-y is just courses. Like it hasn't clicked quite yet in LinkedIn, but I was like, oh, they're really putting money behind this.
Totally.
Being like, you could get certifications, you could get courses, you could watch things on this. And it was like, that felt like, wow, that's a really good fit. And I just didn't really see it take off that well. And then short form took off really well.
That's
if you open the app now, they like will show you like a stream at the top of videos and then everything else. And like 6 months ago, it was like, okay, there's a video tab.
Yeah.
And like 2 months before that, there was like a video tab in beta, but you knew it was working. If you put a vertical video in a written post, there was a chance it was going to get this organic lift. It was very confusing. And I mean, it still is the case, but it's just, yeah, I think that transition is funny because it's almost like it was like, will this work? And it like worked better than I thought, should we put in the footer? Oh, okay. Now that's changed. And now it's like you don't even have to click the button to see it.
I think about that too with like search because it's videos. It's like video was a tab up at the top where you could be like images, video this.
Right.
Now there's like top videos and it's a carousel. Then there's another one that's like even below that that's short form video specific and it's all vertical ones. So it's like they're testing out all these different new modules and stuff.
Yeah.
Let's pivot. So people are making more videos. People are watching more videos. What about interactive video features? Are there things that people are using and they're seeing a lot of return on that? Are there things that people are underutilizing?
Yeah.
What's
going
on?
In State of Video Report, we look at like three interactive features. So that's like a lead gen form. You know, it's an email capture that pops up during the video. CTAs, so that's like a button, or annotation links. Those are buttons that pop up. Overall, what's like very interesting about those is like it's declining in usage. People are not using them as much like year over year. Mm. But the weird thing is that like the performance of them remains really, really good. So like we see conversion rates on those that are like above 40% for like a lead gen form on a video, which is kind of like pretty unprecedented.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. Yeah,
and so it's like one of those things where it's a huge opportunity. I think it's partially though that people are so trained for video to be like ephemeral and placed on social that they don't think about what they could do with video on their website.
It's kind of like the webinars where it's like, you know, webinar, you know, you're going to sign up to get it.
Yep.
And like the email form is like, if you can position a piece of content in the same way that you position a webinar, like you invest in it, you promote it like it's a webinar, it will work like a webinar.
Yeah.
Like you'll get a lot of people signing up just to watch that piece of content. It's actually a pretty easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's like the other thing is like CTAs, I think, are just underrated in this area where like you put a video on and you're talking about something. I'm in a video talking about State of Video Report and a button appears that says like, do you want to download this? The person clicks it. Now they are there. Like any time you can reduce the amount of friction between somebody like seeing something and being able to access it, the better. I think that's going to change because of the way like shopping and videos are starting to come together. Like I think people are getting more used to seeing like clothes or items in videos and knowing like, oh, I could do like, I'll go to the show notes or I'll go to the video description to get whatever the item is they're selling. And I think like you'll start to see that within other videos that are like educational or B2B or things like that, where it's like somebody mentioned something in the video and you might want to go get that. We might mention a piece of gear that we recommend to people. It'd be much easier if we recommended it and there was a button that was like, get this piece of gear now. And so there's just
instead
like a lot
like
of opportunities
down.
Or just having to search.
Yeah.
Like people are lazy. So like if you could just give them something to click, and also if somebody is presented with something to click, they're back engaged to watching the video more. And so like that, I think there's just tons of opportunity with those types of interactive elements that people could be using.
What's your favorite takeaway from this report?
My favorite takeaway from this report, I think I'm just like very happy to see the growth of like in-house teams and agencies. And I think like the takeaway for me was talking with Superside and interviewing other people who are like in agencies. I was really happy to see that more in-house people doesn't mean less agency work. And I think that part of it is like really good to see this new way that agencies and in-house teams are working together. And I think that's something that's like very exciting, because if an in-house person is tasked with like, oh, you got to get this video program up and running, they might think like, oh, it's all on them to do it. But the really successful brands, the people who are doing really, really well, are learning like what they could do well in-house and how they could scale it up with agencies or agencies or freelancers. And I think that's probably one of the most like interesting takeaways for me.
Yeah, I think that is, there was a lot of discussion around that, like maybe 8 years ago. I remember we had a conference and we were talking about this exact thing. And I've talked to people after like, oh God, like, is this gonna, like, what's gonna happen? Like, is everything gonna go in-house and then like, we're not gonna have like work anymore? And I think it's just a testament to the fact that like the demand for video is still exploding at such a crazy rate, because like there's so many places to put it and so many uses for it. And ultimately like this cultural shift that has occurred where it's like, we now expect that we can watch, right? And so when you expect you can always watch something, well, that's a lot of content you got to make. I think that it is interesting to see that actually getting there, like there's so much content to make and so many different places to put it, that there's more than enough work for people in-house and for agencies and for tools to help you like be more efficient. Because even then, people are not keeping up with the demands that they have just on themselves, right? Like the amount of content that they want to make.
Yeah, and it's like, I think it was Pieter from Superside who was like, yeah, we used to get kind of requests to make like one video. Like you would get like, I'm going to go to this agency, they're going to make one slick product video for me. And he's like, now I get requests for like 50 videos or like different variations of videos or cut downs of videos or localizations of videos. So it's like just a new set of work that didn't exist before. So that's probably one of my favorite takeaways. I also just think like a lot of the stuff around dubbing is really interesting to me, because it's one of those where the way that the Dan Caddington from 3Play Media explained it was like, if you're going to dub a video, it costs basically the same based on the number of minutes you're dubbing. And he's like, so it makes sense to dub Game of Thrones because you're spending millions of dollars on an episode. It doesn't make sense to dub an internal video or dub like a short promotional video. But now that like dubbing costs are down, he's like, you could be dubbing things in like all these different languages and start picking up audiences elsewhere.
That's, yeah.
And I don't know, for me, like when I was doing podcast at HubSpot, we had this show that was called like Skill Up, and it was like a fully written season. And it was just about one topic. And I noticed like, hey, this show is actually doing well in like the charts in like Mexico and Brazil and stuff like that. What if we just remade the show in Spanish or in Portuguese?
It feels like, right, another way to like retarget and go deep with an audience that you haven't really had much traction, or you have traction with, but now you can have even more.
Yeah, and then like then once we did, once the Spanish version was there, it was up on the top of all like all Spanish speaking charts. Like all of a sudden it moves up.
Yeah.
And so it's like a lot of B2B brands, a lot of other brands are investing in educational content that they're just not, they don't see the pathway forward or the economics to change the whole thing into another language. Now you can like do that a lot more affordably.
I think it is also a lot of this AI translation stuff is like some of the most accessible technology I've ever seen, and it works so well, and it is affordable, and it, but it does create like this other thing, which is like more demand for content too, which is like, okay, like exactly as you just said, it's one thing to have a show and then also have your website and then also put stuff on social, and also do live events, all these things, and then you're like, actually we want to support this in other languages. Like, well, okay, now you have to have like, there's another podcast, there's another YouTube channel, there's another everything. And the upside, if you can make it work and build the systems, is that like you really can get in front of more folks. I mean, this is like the whole Mr. Beast thing, right? I mean, he was really early on this, pre-AI, like hired voice actors in different countries. A lot of times he hires like famous actors in different countries so that you, it's like kind of a joke or like an in for the people in that country. And realize, like, if I make all these separate channels, like, this is going to be how I create the largest audience.
Yeah, and for Mr. Beast, it's like his videos are, like, millions of dollars. You know what I mean? Like, so the dubbing portion is, like, a very small thing for him. But it's, like, very worth it.
Yeah. Let's go into rapid fire. Okay. So this interview, I would say, has been pretty tame.
Pretty tame.
So far.
Pretty serious.
So we're going to spice it up a little bit. This is the Too Hot for LinkedIn rapid fire edition on
Got
all
it.
Things video. So okay. Get ready, Sam. You might get canceled.
Got it.
Are you ready?
Sure. I'm ready. Let's go.
First question. Which is worse, autoplay with sound or a 5-minute explainer video with no hook?
5-minute explainer, no hook.
Okay, good. I mean, tell us why.
Just
with this autoplay whole thing, the rapid fire cut.
Autoplay gets the people going. Yeah. You know what I mean? Hooks don't. No hook doesn't get people going.
There you go.
Easy. Okay.
No hook, no look.
If you could ban one phrase from marketing videos forever, what would it be?
Oh my god. That I would just have just long,
people saying,
just long drawn out noises.
Very
that
meta.
Would be
I
mine.
Love it. What's the most overused B-roll shot in brand videos right now?
It's the most overused, but also my favorite, where someone is leaning over somebody else and they're pointing at something.
Oh, yes. What a pull. Yeah, I love that so much.
That's like one of my favorite shots. It's definitely overused, but I'm not sick of it yet.
AI avatars, game changer or nightmare?
To me, nightmare.
Yes.
To me, they're a nightmare.
They are a nightmare.
I don't. They're fine. They look fine, I guess. But they're just
they're
just weird to me. They're a little bit strange to me because it's like I don't know what I'm saving time doing.
Yeah.
Like I don't understand why I'm looking at the avatar versus a person, and it seems like it's just slightly bizarre to me. And I feel like even the ones that I see that are like, you couldn't even guess this was AI. I'm like, I guessed it was AI. You know, lot of the times I feel like I'm guessing correctly.
Yeah. You know. You know.
What's one totally unhinged place you'd love to see a brand embed a video?
Unhinged place I would love to see a brand embed a video? Probably... I remember I've been to like sporting events and above urinals, they have TVs. I think that would probably be my favorite, most unhinged place is
Perfect.
If like a brand went really big there.
I love that.
If you're listening,
that's
a great opportunity.
Think outside the box.
It's a captive audience.
They're not going anywhere.
It's really exciting. I can't imagine it's that expensive. Or, the other one I would say would probably be like the gas station TVs. You know, like when you're filling up your car and they have like the little TV at a gas station.
Yeah, nice
go big there.
There you go. Go really big.
Really big, really high production.
Like different videos for like, well, if you're going premium. Yeah.
And don't try and reuse another video at the gas station.
Gotta be for that.
Yeah. Yes. Very tailored to the channel. Very specific.
Always tailor your content to the channel.
I think we should have AI spin up some gas station videos for us after this episode.
Okay. Now let's watch them and react to them. Okay. Sam, it's been delightful.
It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much. Where can people connect with you? Where can they find you to learn more?
They can find me on LinkedIn. My name is Sam Balter. Reach out to me. I will happily talk to everybody.
And where can they find the State of Video Report?
They could go to Wistia. They should go to Wistia. They should go to wistia.com/4/State of Video. It's all over the place.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun. Yay.
We did it.